history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some pretty amazing stories out there that really ought to be told, and we're never going to hear them unless we take the time to ask the right questions and listen to what comes back our way. If we make that patient investment of time, we're going to end up learning a lot of things perhaps we didn't expect or never would have imagined. We're educated, we're entertained, so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation, and when Mother's Day rolls around, it's always fun to shine the spotlight on the women of World War II. They contributed in so many different ways. In addition to the more than 350,000 women who were wearing U.S. Armed Forces uniforms during the war, there were millions more doing what they could to help. And we've heard many of their stories over the years here, from Rosie the Riveters in aircraft factories to USO performers, you're going to meet one of those in a bit, to the Coast Guard spars, the Navy waves, the Army WACs, the nurses who ended up in harm's way. And let's start with a little bit on a daring group of ladies who were flying whatever planes the military was let them climb into. The WASPs, Women Air Force Service Pilots. You've heard from a few of them over the years here, and you can pull up their audio memories online at hometownheroesradio.com. But this weekend's Mother's Day episode is really driven by daughters who want to honor their mothers. And I imagine there are a lot of you out there listening who don't have your mom around anymore. You'd love to go back in time and ask her questions about lots of things, maybe even what she did during World War II. And if that's you, Susan Hahn of Carson City, Nevada, knows how you feel. Her mother, Hazel, was one of the just over 1,000 American women who actually completed their WASP training during World War II. There were 38 of them who were killed in the line of duty while testing or ferrying airplanes to deliver them to the men who would fly them in combat. We're going to hear from Susan briefly about her mom's legacy before we meet a spirited 91-year-old former USO dancer and her daughter. So Susan, I know the WASPs were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal in 2009, but it wasn't until after that that you started to dig into your mom's legacy. So when was that that your interest in this started to take off?
Not until about 2010 or so, when I started to realize all that she did and accomplished as such a young person in difficult times.
She'd been gone for a few years by then. So growing up, did you ever hear stories about her flying or see her flight goggles or hear what a WASP was?
I did, but I didn't really comprehend the historical nature of it. Growing up, hearing about it all the time, it rather was a little bit boring for a child, so I didn't comprehend it really, and my interest as a young child were playtime. But it wasn't until much later that I understood how extraordinary these women were and what they accomplished in that day and age, when that was completely unheard of for women in that time.
So what was it that lit that spark for you, that sparked your interest in her experience as a WASP?
Really, it was reading her manuscript and the journal of her days, and really beginning to understand what not only she went through, but what those women went through. The controversy they faced, the hurdles that they had to overcome, not only being discriminated against by men, but probably people in the nation, thinking that women weren't capable of that, and really coming to understand her courage in the face of such a conflicting time and the discrimination that they faced, and how she and all the other women just fought their way through to fulfill their dreams.
So you have here your mom's actual flight goggles that she wore when she was a WASP. When you hold those in your hand and you feel them, you examine them, what comes to mind for you? Do you picture your mom in the cockpit of one of those planes? Do you imagine flying like she did? What is it that comes to mind?
Yes, I do. And I also hope that maybe I honored her back in 2005. 2015, I believe it was, when the Collins Foundation brought to the Minden Airport a set of World War II planes. And I took flight in the B-29 with her goggles with me and took her, I think, I took her spirit for a flight. She lived in an extraordinary time of change and was very much a part of history and paved the way for many women out there, not only to fulfill their dreams and to pursue them relentlessly, but also to stand up for what is right. I'm just grateful that she left behind information about herself for me to know who she was.
Have you ever wondered how it would be different if you had maybe seen that manuscript and decided not to open it up?
Yes, it would be very different. I wouldn't know her, and I would not have understood her. And through reading her manuscript, I've come to understand myself better as well.
Well, and maybe there's a powerful reminder there for the rest of us. Sometimes, even if our loved ones aren't here anymore, getting to know and understand a little bit about what they did during this pivotal time in our nation's history may lead us toward lessons we never knew we were going to learn. So that was Susan Hahn of Carson City, Nevada, talking about her late mother, Hazel. You can find photos of mother and daughter at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where you'll also learn about 91-year-old Joan Patrone. Her daughter Anna is a loyal Hometown Heroes listener on affiliate KNZR in Bakersfield, California, and she encouraged me to come meet her mom and explore her adventure during World War II as a teenage USO dancer in Europe and Japan. I figured, hey, Mother's Day weekend would be the perfect opportunity, but as is the case with all these amazing Americans we meet on Hometown Heroes, we never know where the conversation might lead. I hope you're ready for a candid, real conversation with a veteran of stage and screen whose life and perspective were forever altered by what she witnessed at the end of World War II. Let's get to know a little bit about Joan Patrone. 91 years old, is that really the truth? Because you don't look 91.
I've been told that. I don't know what to say, but if people doubt it, I offer them to look at my license, and some of them do, and if they don't believe that, I do a Charleston for them, a dance.
So you're going to do a Charleston for me before we leave today?
Well, this is the radio. They wouldn't be able to see it. The viewer wouldn't be. They'd only be able to imagine it.
Well, that's why we have hometownheroesradio.com and the Facebook page. So if you do the Charleston and I video it, they can all see it, and they can see it to believe it.
It's very short. It's about a minute long. So if you're interested, I'm willing to do it. But we don't have to do it. It'd make a nice addition to the interview. But
would it top Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed in It's a Wonderful Life? Uh-huh. Wasn't that a Charleston they were doing?
I don't remember that.
Or was it the Jitterbug? And am I really talking to a Jitterbug champion?
The Charleston was before my time, probably even before I was born, maybe. Mm-hmm. But the jitterbugging was entirely different. I won some jitterbug contests when I was young. I want to remind you that I'm from Long Island, and it is an island in the Atlantic. And I was really raised, unbeknownst to most people, they don't think of themselves as natives. I was a primitive, because I can remember going with my relatives on a boat, and they said, okay, now you get out and you put your feet in the sand and you sink a little bit and you feel for the clams. You bend over and pick up the clams and put them in this bucket. And I did so, but as I got in the mud, I got hysterical because I just kept sinking, and I thought, I'm just going to continue to sink. These people don't know what they're doing. You know, even though I saw others doing it, I felt like I was not going to be able to stop the sinking. Mm-hmm. So I did a little bit of it, but I did experience what it's like to be very close to nature, and your food sources were from planet Earth, farming and fishing and stuff. And we used to go to Jones Beach, and the beach was beautiful, white sands, and it was a wonderful life there as a primitive. So then in high school, it was like a utopia. It was so wonderful. There was nothing ever went wrong. Everything always went right. And then I became 17, and I picked up a newspaper in front of the house that wasn't ours, and I looked through it, and it said, USO dancers wanted. And I thought, hey, that sounds like great. You know, this town is small, and I'm growing out of it. It's a small town, and it's getting a bit boring. You know, I'd like to see the world, and this is an opportunity. I could go to France, Germany, and Japan. Wow! So I went, and I was chosen, and I found myself on a boat.
Let me come back to that, because I want to give a little context and background here. First of all, I mean, you're growing up as the middle child out of five, so you've got a couple brothers and a couple sisters. Do you remember having an idea, hey, when I grow up, here's what I'm going to do, here's what I'm going to be, this is what I'm going to spend my life chasing?
The first memory I have of being in front of an audience was when I was 3 years old. I had a little umbrella, and I was hiding behind it on stage. I was told to look to the right, look to the left, look over it, and pick up and do a little twirl, and I did that. And the audience went, I saw the faces. It was like a tapestry. It was sort of all these dark colors and light colors mixed with, you know. It was beautiful. And when they saw me, they said, oh, I could hear this big sigh, and I thought, oh, that they like me.
Well, I'm curious. You're there. You know, you're a young teenager, maybe 14 years old, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Do you remember that day and how you heard?
I came from a poor, struggling family because my father left my mother with five kids and her mother. So we struggled. We were hurting for food. I can remember not caring, but I think I had two pairs of socks. For years I had the same socks. I'd wash them and sew them if they were got holes in them. So we were struggling, and we were poor. And I used to pick beans for my mother to help with the money, and then I think she went on relief. But in high school, it was euphoric. I was happy. I was a cheerleader, captain. I was a captain of our teams, hockey and volleyball. They didn't have a drama course, so I asked the principal if they were going to have one. He said no, so I made up my own skits and performed anyway and sang. And I was so busy, I didn't have time to be miserable. However, there was something. The only communication I had with the outside world was a little box that we used to sit in front of. It was called a radio. And we would listen to Hi-Oh Silver, The Lone Ranger. We'd listen to Jack Benny and things like that. And we would sit there and imagine what it was like, but the visuals. But that was the only, I never heard one thing ever that I can remember. And it may have just slipped by me as not being important. Didn't know that Hitler was trying to conquer the world. Didn't know that he was killing millions for his own self-glorification. I didn't know about the war being over, except when 1945 came, I was going to go on this boat trip to, you know, it was like, I didn't have the awareness that I have now.
What about when your brother joined the service? Was that hard to see your brother going off to war?
No, there was no talking about it, no last dinner together, nothing. He went off to Florida. I went off to France and Germany. We just did things. There wasn't much communication about it that I can remember. It was just things are happening. That was what my impression was.
So when you saw that Help Wanted ad for USO dancers, the whole idea is you guys go overseas, you entertain the troops who have been risking their lives, and many of them wounded, have been through all these horrible things, and you try to brighten their day a little bit, right? What was your understanding of what you were going over there to do?
I told you it was a personal adventure. It was like, we're off to see the wizard, the wonderful wizard of, you know, it was it was an adventure. And I would observe and absorb and learn as I went. I was trying to figure out what my life was all about. What was my purpose? I didn't have any. I just was like everybody else. Sometimes I think of us all as being astronauts on planet Earth without the spacesuits, that we're all on this little ball, you know, and the gravity keeps us all tight together. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I'm not afraid to tell you what my imagination is like.
I'm sure you just made a few people think about it.
Yeah. People are afraid to talk about their inner nature because it's pretty scary in there. I just kept going through life as I said before, like a cat. I was very curious to see what it was all about, just like you did, everybody else. It is a journey.
Well, and I'm sure you had no idea what that journey was going to be like
when
my God, no. You set out as a teenager from the East Coast and you head to Europe, where there's been a war going on for years here. Okay. So what did you see over there, and what did you do?
I was on this transport, and it seemed dangerous because the waves were very high crossing the Atlantic. I could stand against the wind and it would hold me up. It was fun, you know. Then we landed, and we weren't briefed about what it was like, which I felt was lacking, and, you know, they should have cared more. I found myself in a truck going through a bombed city with the rubble, and then it was kind of smelly, you know, we didn't know what was going on. Something, well, get a handkerchief, because those people are dead under the buildings. And so the rubble was their gravestone above the earth. So suddenly I was transported from a state of, you know, a utopian, happy little kid, you know, having a wonderful time. Everything was great. And now I was put in this environment of this dark, hellish rubble, the insanity of killing people for what, war zone. And it was shocking. It was like from night into day, into this tsunami of evil that was in force. You know, it was all, everything was insane and crazy and killing and starving and no anything. Food was hard to get, or electricity, or thing. People were being killed. And sudden, it was all like, and I wasn't there with a soldier with a rifle. I was just there with my, what, my dancing shoes. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, so I began to become very cautious. Oh, okay, so I'm here to entertain the troops. That's it.
So it sounds like that was kind of overwhelming for you.
Very. It was very overwhelming. I didn't know even then that it was overwhelming. So I don't feel that what I was doing was heroic. And if I was being heroic, I wasn't consciously doing it. I was just being part of it.
And remember, she was an 18-year-old kid who, like many of those young men she was there to entertain, was not prepared to see, to smell, to hear, to understand the devastation of war. It's time for our first break, but we'll have more with 91-year-old Joan Patron when we come back. The haunting scene she witnessed in Hiroshima with the first USO troop to visit there after the war. How she reacted in that moment and why she still has strong feelings about it now. We'll also hear about her long friendship with actor Marlon Brando. Check out the photos and a short video I know you're going to love at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll be right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say, I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. Nearly 1,000 veterans have gotten to see their memorials for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.